Hello, welcome to the Lately in JavaScript podcast. This is episode 65. Oh, there are many episodes that we recorded already, more than like 5 years.
Yeah.
Maybe you need to make some celebration and call Michael Kimsel. I miss Michael Kimsel because he was always making those funny jokes.
It would be a reunion.
Anyway, we are here to talk about JavaScript, and I'm just going to give a too long, but didn't read the overview of the topics that we are going to cover, starting precisely about this article that tells about how to build a 3D engine in JavaScript without relying on WebGL or libraries like 3.js. Then we talk about an interesting, actually a simple trick, but just a surprising effect that shows how you can, for instance, if somebody clicks on the logo of your site, you can make it show a pop-up that will tells people, oh, if you want the site logos, just download them here. And the next article is about something interesting, which I still did not figure out to do, but it is basically a library that can pause animated GIFs. I did not figure out to do it, but we'll talk about it in more detail ahead. Then we talk about the polemic of last month, which was the major breaking of NPM modules due to one developer unpublishing one package from there and causing major havoc to at least for people that they are using Node.js. And then we'll cover somewhat again another opinion article about writing JavaScript modules with plain JS, I mean, without depending on jQuery or some other libraries, or be so dependent on other libraries. Then we have an interesting speech recognition library that is interesting because it doesn't rely on any speech recognition APIs. It just can be trained to recognize words and others, maybe sentences. Then there is just a curiosity here, which is a list of emulators that exist that were written in JavaScript, many of them. Then there is an article that we would like to comment about this opinion of an author that is stating that JavaScript is the most commonly used programming language on Earth, and it's official. I don't know, it is only official now, but we'll talk more about it later. Finally, there is an article in JS Classes by Till Wiowski that is teaching about his approach to easily migrate existing web applications to make them work in mobile devices, make them faster using AJAX requests, but do not require so many changes. So it's an interesting article that we are going to comment ahead.
And with this, we basically reached the end of the podcast. Goodbye. That was fast.
Yeah, that's what eventually I will say later, but now it's time to get more into detail about these topics. Let's start precisely by the first one that I comment, which is, let me share the screen here, which is building a 3D engine with JavaScript. You know, there is WebGL, there is also the 3.js library. I thought the 3.js library would use WebGL or not.
I don't know, but basically I think WebGL is mostly for the cases when you already have some GL shader codes or stuff like that you want to reuse, or you have OpenGL code that you want to reuse and stuff like that. So it's just a way to cross-compile your code, cross-use it, if you may say that. So but it's still, in the end, just drawing the pixels, so it doesn't matter how or who is drawing pixels.
Yes, but this library uses, I mean, this article talks about rendering 3D objects without using any of those libraries, right?
Yeah, so basically at first they discuss the ways to store to create the vertex objects and all the structure that this needs behind it. And then in the end you will see that there is a simple rendering code, just iterates through the structures and draws the lines, and that's basically it. And you can even view examples as one of them are rotating cube that they draw based on the provided code.
Yes, but is this a full 3D library or just only for simple 3D objects?
I think, yeah, it's mostly more simple objects that you support, but it's just a way to show you that you don't need to use a library to draw 3D objects, you can do it yourself.
Yeah, and it shows an example here in CodePen, yes. And you can see that it's not slow, or at least for this simple object.
It's actually, when I'm viewing through Hangout on your screen, it seems slow, but on my screen it's also, it's quite dynamic, it's not slow. So it's just
I'm saying precisely that is not slow. So something done in pure JavaScript, it's quite fast.
Yeah, but someone who will see the Hangout would probably think it's slow because of internet connection.
Oh, maybe. I don't know. You know that the Hangouts do not send all the frames.
Yeah,
just to save bandwidth. Well, but it is interesting, and you know that if you need something 3D and you do not rely on those on WebGL being available on the browser, you can use this.
You can just simply draw anything you need in Canvas. It might be a little more complex or much more complex, involving much more math than an average person would know, but it's still possible.
Okay, this is really interesting. So now we are going to move on to the next article that is talking about something simple, probably obvious, but it's curious because all the author realized about this. He just went to the Envision Help site, which you can go now, and then, like many people that want to, oh, I like this logo, let me take the logo from the site. With the right click, and instead of seeing a menu to save the image, it shows a pop-up with some instructions. Oh, you want to download your logos? You can grab a zip packet with logos and bug icons, PNG, EPS format. So they're making it easy for you to download your logos.
Yeah, I think it's very valuable for companies, especially companies that have partnerships with many others. So they usually put each other's logos on the website and stuff like that. And now developers can easily get those logos, so I think it's quite interesting idea.
Yeah, the for instance, companies that have affiliate programs and affiliates want to copy the logos to put in articles or something somewhere else. You know, well, technically the solution is not hard or unexpected. It's just basically they listen to the context menu event and do just prevent default to avoid showing the menu, and then use some overlays some pop-ups that will show in the on the screen as we have seen. So this is not so unexpected. It's just more of the curiosity of maybe some companies want also to adopt this idea. Oh, let's put a pop-up there in case somebody wants to save our logos.
It's like a way to allow download press kits.
Yeah. Okay.
That being said, of course, it's a bad practice to override.
Well, because press kit, when people want to download press kit, they just want to see like advertising, right?
When a journalist when a journalist want to write about your website, they probably are looking for a press kit.
Okay, I didn't thought of that, but maybe that's a good use. Anyway, let's move on to the next topic,
sure,
on which we are going to talk about a library that does something that I could not figure out. Do they do that? Which is basically a library that allows you to pause GIF animations. I did not look at the code, but
I did.
So what is the trick? Did you?
Basically, okay, first we probably need to explain what it does. So, you know, the GIFs, I don't know, internet is always breaking about it, how to name it, is it GIF or GIF? I usually name it GIF, but it's an animated image, and this package would allow to pause this animated image and only play it on hover, mouse hover, for example, or stuff like that. So, but there is no API to control GIFs, so I looked at examples how they're doing it. Basically, they are drawing canvas above the existing image, and then they control this canvas, pausing and animating it. But again, there is no way to access the frames from the GIF files. So I was checking again code for more information. I couldn't really get much of that. But
so they are copying the image to a canvas?
Yes, that's the usual practice, but it's probably there is some tricks
when
to
you
do.
Copy, okay, when you copy, how do you guarantee that you'll pick the current frame that is showing?
That is a very good question.
Can it resume or just freeze?
I think it can resume, at least from the examples that I saw. At first, I saw that they probably not loading image as image, but rather making some HTTP request to retrieve the GIF file and parse it on their own.
That way they can control.
Yeah, but I did not see anything that would specify that they do it in this code. It's more like they're having a texture atlas and drawing different frames based on it, but really it's hard to know without understanding the code and examining it a little more.
Yeah. Well, that is interesting. If you want to know more, you need to dig deeper in the code. I still could not figure out the step that they did, but if you say they'd load it in a canvas, and so they are not loading the real image, I suppose.
Probably not.
Yeah, they show it here, like originally it would be like this, and then they would show it here. Okay. Well, it's something that if you are curious, you should take a look. And if you can do it yourself or otherwise use this library.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, the next topic, it is about the polemic of the month, which is basically the breaking and NPM node library, node babel, thousands of problems with just 11 lines of code. Arthur, you are the one that uses Node, but although you said you were not affected, can you give an overview of the story?
Sure. Especially where there are a lot of, probably could be a lot of confusion here. Okay, I think I have the name. So basically, there is one Node.js author whose name is Azer Kotsulu, and he had lots of Node modules published, more than 250 Node modules. And he was contributing a lot, and lots of users used his modules. But one day, he had one module that was named Kick. And one day, he got an email from a company named Kick that is an instant messaging app to take down that module and give them back their name, basically. And of course, he refused it because he's like, oh, the open source and people have the power type of guy. But then this company lawyers went to NPM, who manages the Node modules, the repositories, and asked them to remove it, and NPM removed the Kick module. And the author itself was very furious about it, so he removed all of his modules from NPM. And lots of other code that were relying on these modules were now broke, because when you install it, it has no dependency to install from. The most popular one was the left pad, which was padding string with zeros or spaces. And as you see, the module itself was quite easy, 11 lines, but lots of libraries, including Babel, were depending on it. So that actually shows the paradigm of the Node module dependencies, that we start depending even on simple codes like that. And something like this can happen. So because lots of things broke, the CTO and co-founder of NPM did something that was never done before. He unpublished this specific package left pad, and because it was lots of other packages depended on it. So even if Alpha removed it, and by website's terms of services it should have been removed, they basically returned it back, and now there is a new they found a new a new user who would maintain the package and stuff like that. So it's all kind of resolved around there, but it just shows you how slippery it is to rely on some other modules, especially for some simple tasks that could happen. Yeah, and just I can add that the company, the Kick, also gave their own explanation of this, and the reason why they requested for Alpha to remove the Kick module is because they want to release their own module with the same name Kick, so they want to retain this name. So it's just an interesting, really interesting situation here, and it shows how all the structure can collapse quite easily.
Yeah. And what about you? Were you affected by this break?
No, I don't think so. As far as I know, that we were not affected directly, and I think that all the dependencies
we have... It affected Node. You are using Node. Weren't you affected? Why not?
Yeah, well, we are not building Node. I don't think that Node directly uses the package. If it would use Babel, for example, it would be affected. But I don't think that Node directly uses this package, because Node is mostly.
It's because the article says that it affected Node and Babel. So, one developer just broke Node, Babel, and thousands of projects. So, is this not accurate?
No, probably. Means a little more like NPM, broke NPM or stuff like that, because made them do what they didn't before. and stuff like that. So I don't think it was related to Node specifically.
Yeah. So what was the outcome? The model was restored or something?
Yeah, the model was restored, and now the results, the maintainer maintaining it. So always good, everything good. And it actually puts more trust in PM. So if such things happen, they can recover quite quickly, putting in interests of the author of the one below the interests of the many of the users and dependents.
Right, and they replaced the maintainer, or what, how did it go there?
No, they just restored the package in PM. I don't know, maybe now GitHub link to change to the new maintainer or something like that, but that's not really what matters most. It matters the most that they restored it before some bad things happen.
Yeah, it's because when a thing like this doesn't happen, not necessarily affects everybody immediately. It's only when they do some update, a new package, and realize that there is some package missing.
Exactly, like installing or updating.
So what are the measures that they implemented to avoid major problems in the future?
I know they probably would update the terms of services that they can restore packages if there are too many users dependent on it or stuff like that.
So they restore the package with the author permission or?
Without permission, yeah. They restored it without author's permission.
Because what was the license of the package? So do you know?
No, we can check probably.
Well, once it is open source, probably it's a license that allows them to keep a copy. But then the newer versions need to be took over somebody with a fork, right?
Probably.
Yeah, well, this kind of, but what I've got from this is that the media sites made this a big deal, as if, oh, the world is going to collapse.
Well, they need to catch the headline.
Yeah, that was one way to get more viewers to their articles and advertising and so on. And okay, well, it's a bit unusual, but now that happened, I think the community is more prepared to deal with similar episodes if they happen in the future. Okay, so let's move on with another article. It's more an opinion article. One of those that say, oh, we don't need the jQuery anymore. But I don't know. Just saying why I write plain JavaScript modules. So it's not just I can, but why I do it. And yes. Personally, I think it is always a good idea to have the least dependencies as possible. Even now that we have seen what happens when you have excessive dependencies.
Exactly.
So it's not like anybody is going to take your jQuery away and break your application, but I think the least dependencies you have, the better. But sometimes you really depend on something that does something complicated that you could not do by yourself. But the point here is more like, well, nowadays modern browsers use JavaScript APIs that are provide at least the same functionality as other equivalents like jQuery. What I think is that once people start using jQuery, they get used to the plugins. And sometimes even if the plugins do not really need so much jQuery, they already provide a functionality, so they become dependent on those plugins. So, well, the sooner you avoid this dependency, the better, because later probably we are to get rid of that dependence. Well, that's my opinion. What do you think?
Yes, well, it might be easier to write some library for this specific case that you need using this specific library based on jQuery or Backbone.js or React or Angular.js or whatever you're using. But in the long term, if you would write library that is like framework agnostic, independent, you would be able to use it in future in any other projects that you have, no matter what other libraries it uses. So in this project you use Angular.js, next project you use React. So you would have to rewrite your library again to match the other, because as we all know, JavaScript has lots of frameworks and they change constantly now is a new trend and stuff like that. So that, at least that would be the reason to write your code and some packages and libraries more framework independent.
Yes, I think you have to be careful and pay more attention to what you depend. If not before, at least now that this
is very good. you will mention it all the time, right?
No, because, well, personally, I was always concerned. I think it was you some time, like maybe a few years ago, asking me, oh, you developed PHP classes, why don't you use the classes of others?
Yeah, that's what I said.
Exactly. Now you got the answer. No, it's not just that. It's that if I feel capable of developing a component that I need, I think I should use it. It's not exactly that I always only use my own components. But for instance, the search engine used by PHP CosNJS classes is a very old package that is not developed for many years.
Yes, but it's working. PHP changes to version 9 or 10, it would break.
No, it's not even a PHP package. It's something, an external program.
Oh, I see.
Crawls and indexes. And okay, I could move on to some code that I wrote, but or maybe some my modern library like Elasticsearch or Sphinx or something. But I would have to have a huge work to rewrite that code.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe I won't get rid of that dependency anytime soon. If at all, because
yeah.
I have so many prioritary things to do and I already developed so many things on top of that library that I don't know. Maybe that the day I will switch to something will be never. I'll like to, but first, anything that I will do is just to make it work like it is already. So it will not be an advantage, at least in the beginning.
True.
Then later we'll see. So I have to evaluate. I have so many other things to do. I have new projects that I want to get involved. So the priority to get there is probably very low. Okay. Anyway, let's move on to another article that is interesting again because it does something without relying on APIs. It is an article about a JavaScript speech recognizer. I don't know if you can demo it because I'm using the microphone. I can try.
Probably not. Microphone will be already busy.
Yeah, I think we tried to do that in the past. It was not possible. Test. No, it's working. Oh, now Chrome is multitasking the applications that use the microphone. Isn't that great? Voila. Let's try this. Let me increase the font. Test. Okay. I have trained it. Now I'm going to test. Oh, it guess that I have written that said test with confidence 0.357. Oh, this is great. Not a big confidence, but at least. But I guess you have to train it word by word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can build your own Siri or Jarvis.
I don't know. Okay. Okay. Oh.
You should try something similar to test, like text.
Yeah, good idea. Let me test.
What?
No, this is not working. It's what you say, it's not the last word. Test. Okay. Text.
Yeah, so confidence is much, much lower. Okay. But if you train it for text, what would happen?
Let me try it to text. Text. Test. Okay. Text.
Uh-huh.
No, it's not this smart. Text. No, it's
still
not really. I don't know. Okay.
Well,
good intention.
There are kind of similar words that probably really, really tough case.
Yeah. Yeah, but well, to make it work reliably, it must be able to at least sometimes recognize text.
Maybe if you teach it better, more times, it will become better.
Yeah. Maybe when I have time to do it. Okay. Moving on, I'm going to just mention briefly about this interesting page that tells about emulators written in JavaScript. It tells about emulators of many machines, Acorn, Amstrad, Apple, Atari, Commodore, DEC, Nintendo, Sega, Sinclair, Tandy, multi-systems, PC emulators, bare CPUs, early machines. What do you mean early machine? Turing machine. What do you simulate the Turing machine? Does it have wheels? And
what? No, probably not.
Calculators, miscellaneous. Oh, this is interesting.
So
what amazes me is that as an emulator for Commodore Amiga, I used to have a Commodore Amiga many years ago. Actually, I still have it boxed somewhere. It can run certain games.
What does it offer?
What is this game? And there are demos. Do you know what are demos?
No.
Demos, this is very cool. Just things that demonstrate what you can do with the hardware.
Okay. Can you run that?
Let's see if I recognize any, I don't know, maybe this one. I did not try this, so I'm not sure if this is going to work. It's loading. Can you see anything?
Something's happening. Yeah, a black screen. Oh, it's brighter now.
It's loading.
And it's showing something.
It's a bit distorted, but okay.
Can you interact?
Hello. Well, I don't remember this demo, but okay.
And there were also games, right?
Can you listen to some audio? No.
Yes, some 8-bit maybe, or even less audio.
Oh, but this is still awesome. This demo is not particularly impressive, but it's awesome that they could. Because there are Amiga emulators, but they are written in C, not JavaScript.
Well, this are also probably emscripted from C, so.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it's emscripted. Actually, I'm pretty sure it's emscripted. Well, anyway, it's just interesting just to show what can be done.
It also had games, right?
Sorry?
It also had games, right?
Yes, it had games. Did you want to see the games?
Yeah, any familiar that you know, that you're good at?
I don't know if I remember. How do I go there?
back. Only share your screen if you can.
Oh, it's not sharing. Sharing. Okay, I think this is like one of those arcade games. Oh, these are free games, not commercial ones. And it's loading. This is not very fast, but it's loading. Because I don't know, they should probably load the operating system.
Yeah.
Oh, there it is.
Is it how it also looked like?
I don't remember, but this seems very slow. Okay, I see. So let's pretend that I have a... Oh, this is slow on purpose. That's...
What do you mean?
It was an animation, not exactly.
I see.
Well, but it's not going anywhere. I'm afraid this is not doing anything. This says in save late, but if you want to change, hold down fire button. Oh, I think I need to have a joystick.
Ooh, I've launched some God of Tanks. It seems to be working.
Oh, really? Which one?
Tanks. But Tanks. It was loading for a long, long time.
These games are probably lame.
Stream. So, I don't know how to play it yet, but... I think I can click on something with this, your shot, so I can view the terrain, I can move the terrain, I can shoot.
Oh, Aros. Aros is an Amiga emulator.
So if you see my screen that I am already doing something.
Oh, I see. Oh, it's very slow.
Oh, such noise. What is happening?
Oh, this is one of those not so amazing games.
Okay, I think we can move on. This probably will take you forever to load it. It's loading for me really slowly.
Okay. So, moving on. And one article that we mentioned initially, this is article by Daniel Rowinski, just saying it's official JavaScript is the most commonly used programming language. Well, on Earth, but well, given that JavaScript is used on many websites, why now? Why it's official now?
Probably only now someone made the research on how popular it is. As it says, the average software developer is a male aged 29.
Oh, because the Stack Overflow survey was released now.
You know what? I'm an average software developer. I'm almost age 29 and I'm quite obsessed with JavaScript. That makes sense. I thought I was special, but I'm an average.
That's your mother lied to you. You are not. Mothers always lie to children. Well, anyway, I tried to open the survey, but itself for some reason is not opening. I don't know. Can you open? Oh, it's opening now.
It says pop-up block. You need to unblock the pop-up. So open it.
Okay. Oh, I see. So now average count, average age, Rockstar Ninjas, developers.
What? Rockstar Ninjas? What do you mean?
So, oh, okay. I got it now. Full stack, backend, mobile.
Also backend? That seems quite popular.
Well, it's the people participating in Stack Overflow.
Yeah, okay.
I think it's significant, but okay. 85.3%. But if you use JavaScript and some other language, probably JavaScript always appears first.
true. Even if you use .NET, for example, or ASP.NET applications, then you use JavaScript for frontend.
Yeah, so, okay. Now it's official, as if we didn't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is just a curiosity. So, moving on, we're just talking about one last article. That is about a library called Microflow. I think that's the way to pronounce it. And it was developed by Tilo Wielski. And apparently, this goal was to take existing sites and make them mobile friendly. One of the things to make mobile friendly, it's not just to make it responsive, but also to make the pages load faster. Mm-hmm. And to load the page faster, you need to, it suggests to use Ajax. So his idea is to use some code that will redirect the links, the clicks on the links. So when you click on a given link, it will load the content rather than...
it will load the view, which will load the content.
Yeah, it load the core of the page. Avoid the navigation. It probably will be slower and more user-friendly. You just need to mark the links with some attributes. Mm-hmm. And then on the server size, you can have PHP to capture the output and just unstrip the body to make it go and respond.
I see. So yeah, it's basically an easy way to convert an existing website to an Ajax website.
Yeah, I think there is a package that already does this. I'm not sure if it does on PHP classes or JS classes, but the idea is to change the links just to make them go to Ajax requests, to perform Ajax requests to retrieve the content. So this is interesting. Mm-hmm. This is this package by, use this package Microflow to implement this solution. So I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, definitely.
I somewhat did that in the well, not totally like that, but in the package pages of PHP classes, JS classes, just to, for instance, load the code for files. If you want to show the files, the contents of the files, it uses Ajax requests to show them.
Just so you know, we are watching your Facebook page now.
Oh, sorry. I forgot to stop. I closed the window and I meant to stop sharing.
Yeah.
Anyway, the idea here is just to avoid the overhead of loading the whole page, and at the same time keep the navigation where the user is looking. So when you load the page, for instance, let's see some package here. For instance, this one.
We are not seeing the screen.
Now I'm not sharing the screen.
Yeah. And what needs to get more sleep.
We have tabs. Some content is already loaded. Other content is loaded dynamically. But for instance, files. Here we have 27 files. If you want to go to a directory, the listing is already loaded, just changes to that. And as you see, it loaded this content, but it was retrieved dynamically using Ajax. And it was quite fast. But what it did is to make, you don't have to build all this structure, is just change the links of existing pages. And if for some reason JavaScript is not working, it will still work because it will actually go to the pages. So even have that positive advantage. Now we are going to comment about the Innovation Award nominees and winners, starting precisely from the JS classes, JavaScript nominees. Let me share the screen here. Okay, where is the button? Okay, this is one. So in January, we only had two nominees, so they were voted on February and on March results come out. So now we can comment about them already. Archer, which ones would you like to comment?
Yeah, so I will comment about simple JavaScript tabs, package developed by Pravin Sonavane from India. And basically, it is a simple JS component that provides a tab functionality by replacing a content when tab is switched. I think, yeah, we can also see an example here. So we set a specific tab and use a data parameter, data attribute to provide a tab to which we want to switch and change its title. So yeah, as I said, it's quite simple, and it's probably innovative because it's the first in such type in this site, right?
Yes, it's quite simple, not something that as we have already seen, but the idea here is to have just a few tabs and a simple way to switch the content. Yeah, although this is very common, even the JS classes site uses something like that for the package pages. This object makes it more generalized, and for that it is nominated because there were no other being submitted before. And yes?
And yeah, I just want to say that and Pravin got a downloadable ebook of choice by O'Reilly for this package.
Okay, that's true. That's nice, a nice prize. So on my behalf, I also would like to comment on another package, this one from Farid Adon Rahim from Bangladesh. And he sent package called Radiogram.js, and it lets you have those multiple single choice user interfaces to pick from a certain option, defined in HTML, and it automatically creates radio inputs and associates with the HTML blocks that will be available to others, to the users, I mean. And for this, Faradun did not pick a prize because I contacted him and did not reply. And, well, if he's listening, please contact so you get the prize that you asked. So this is just the nominees of January. We don't know many, but we are going to move on to the winners of 2016 so far. It already takes in account the winners of February, this ranking. And in first place, there is Stefan Shepman and Andres Toth with 3 points, one package. Then Pravin Sona, one package and 2 points. Then Mark Rolich, one package, 1 point, tied with Faradun Rahim from Bangladesh with 1 package and 1 point. And by country, we have so far Australia, Hungary tied with 1 package and 3 points. India in third place with 1 package and 2 points. Armenia with one package and 1 point. Bangladesh, one package and 1 point, also in fourth place. Okay, with this, we practically end this podcast. I'd like to thank you, Arthur, again for coming. And on my behalf, that is all for now. Bye.
Bye.